Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Hello, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of BIB Radio. Today is April 13th, 2017, and we have a powerful show for you as usual. Tonight I am joined by my co-host, I'm sure, Robert 11X. Are you there, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. And yourself?
I am doing fabulous. So for the sake of time, we won't do too much small talk because our first guest is at bay waiting to come on. She's anxious to come on and talk to us about her program. Her name is Miss Jamila Camp, and she's going to talk to us about our title show today, 501c3 and Nonprofit Guidance. Join us for BIB Radio, April 13th, 2017. You know the time. Let's see, Ms. Kemp holds an associate's degree in business administration and a bachelor's in business management from the University of Phoenix. She obtained her master's in nonprofit and association management from University of Maryland University College, May 2014. Ms. Kemp's tenacity, drive, determination, and willingness to help others culminated into the birth of It Takes Two, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit organization that awards scholarships to students living in single-parent homes. As a single mother, she understands the financial and emotional strains associated with one-parent and one-income households. It Takes Two, Inc. is her ministry to pay it forward by relieving the financial burden associated with back-to-school costs. Her commitment to our youth education is expertly displayed through various workshops that address topics such as bullying, financial literacy, how to find and apply for scholarships, and effective resume writing and interview etiquette skills. And then our last hour, we'll be talking to Ms. Lushana Turner of LT&A LLC, an expert in securing government grants and funding. She also has had a great experience. She has experience in contract writing. Let's see, the LT&A group teaches the compliance factor to its clients. The factor is comprised of a sound strategy, a business outline, which contains goals, timelines, detailed budget to support rates and control costs, disclosure statements to guide the government through your business structure and policies and procedures to direct company personnel. Now, both of these ladies I've had on my other show, Black Love and Relationships, and I like to have our shows with a theme that we can kind of relate to as far as both the guests. So I think that this is great because one specializes in one area and the other specializes in another. But hopefully they can collaborate together and make some things happen for our people. That's always my goal as the infopreneur. So let's see. We got a few more minutes left. So, Robert, what do you think about that? Have you got some questions about startup of 501c3, government funding, that type of thing?
Yes, ma'am, I sure do. This is so interested in starting something with VIB.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, what is it that you'd like to do?
Well, we have want to get the program started. I mean, I talked enough about making young people entrepreneurs. Been on that subject for years, and have some other ideas in terms of creating workshops for them. So I want to do that in a not-for-profit setting, but give them a real-time feel of business. And I'm not going to go too far into it, you know, but that's what I'm looking to do, something on that line.
Right. Well, no, it's okay, because that's why we do this show, because the questions that you may have, I'm sure somebody else has. The goals that we all have to further the enrichment of our people can somehow connect and collaborate if we're all on the same page and wanting to move forward. So that's why we are going to have our first guest on. So I believe she's already on. Let me see if this is her phone number. I actually don't know what number she's going to be calling in from, but let me see if this is her. Welcome to BIB Radio. Who do we have on the line? No, that is not her. That is someone else. So we will chat a little bit until she comes on. I think she's going to come on at 12 after I told her to give us a few minutes to just kind of get things together. So we can still talk about it. Now, there's a lot of, I would say, misunderstandings about 501c3s. A lot of people fear them because it's the government, because they don't want to deal with the government. And I would say, you know, you have to deal with the government if you're really in business. You really do. I mean, just the simple transfer of money. I mean, that's dealing with the government. But some people don't want to deal with the paperwork and somebody tracking them and looking at them and that kind of thing. 501c3, I think, is usually the status that churches have so that they don't have to deal with the tax part of it. I don't know the difference between a 501c3 or a 501c4. I also have some questions about nonprofit and not-for-profit. I'm not sure about those things, but I'm sure one of the ladies can definitely clear those questions up as we talk to them. And it looks like she is on the line. So let's go in. Hello, welcome to BIB Radio. Who are we speaking with?
Hello, good evening. This is Jamila Kemp. How are you?
Hi, Jamila. This is Cece, and we have Brother Robert 11X on the line also.
Hi, Jamila.
Wonderful. Good evening. How are you?
Doing great, and you?
I'm well. No complaints at all.
Well, that's wonderful. We definitely appreciate you joining us at this late hour. I know things can kind of get tough as you're dealing with your child at the end of the day, homework, dinner, and whatever else comes to your doorstep. So we definitely appreciate you joining us. And we also have been following you a little bit on Facebook. So why don't you get us started and let us know, outside of what I've already read, about you and your business.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for the opportunity. I just want to thank you and take the opportunity to thank you for having me on this evening and sharing with your audience. Jamila Kemp Consulting was birthed out of me graduating in 2014 with my master's in nonprofit and association management from University of Maryland University College. And if I can be quite transparent, it was time to start paying my student loans back. So I was like, okay, so how am I going to do this, Lord? Where is the money going to come from? So he said, use what I gave you and put your degree to work. So that's exactly what I did in starting Jamila Kim Consulting. I'm able to take what I learned in the classroom, what I'm learning every day through my own nonprofit that I started 5 years ago, and through the work that I do on my day job, which is also a nonprofit. So in living in that space and sleeping, eating, breathing nonprofit sector, I learn a lot. No one ever knows enough or everything. So I'm able to take all of those experiences and to help regular everyday people with amazing visions to improve their communities or positively impact the lives of other people and turn it into a viable nonprofit organization. The basis of Jamila Kim Consulting is educationally based. I educate, I train, I provide information so that my clients understand the nonprofit sector, what is expected of them, some of the challenges that they'll have to overcome, but also the amazing success stories that they're going to have as they travel along this journey. So in May, we'll be celebrating 3 years in business, and time has just flown by. But it's been an awesome, awesome journey so far, and I am loving the ability and the opportunity to help people to birth a business, which to me is a baby because it's your idea. God gave you the vision, and you're just operating in it and bringing it to fruition. So I'm just so excited to be a part of the journey of so many people that I've been able to assist so far.
Wow, that definitely sounds exciting. And I'm sure you run across all types of different businesses. Tell us the most interesting business that you've been able to assist with starting up their nonprofit.
Well, they're all interesting because, so I can't just choose one. For one, I don't want to be biased. I love them all. If you would allow me just to answer that question a different way, is we have nonprofits that focus on youth, family, from the schoolhouse to home, and they use literacy as an opportunity to bridge the gap. It's called The Better Place Incorporated. I have another client, it's called Lorenz Law Incorporated. She provides anti-bullying awareness, and she also talks about suicide prevention. It's a very personal story for her in that she lost her daughter to suicide, and she was actually being bullied by an adult. So she has taken her passion, her hurt, and she's turned it around so that she can prevent other families from having to go through the pain that she's experiencing on a day-to-day basis. Another client focuses on young girls and making sure that they're prepared for college and beyond. If they're struggling in any sort of way, she's there to provide support through mentoring and workforce development and things along those lines. And my last client also works with workforce development and making sure our young people have opportunities to making the life that they want to see ultimately. And finally, we have a organization that is focused on domestic violence victims and survivors, getting them out of the situation and helping them to cope. So as you can see, it is a whole span of missions, and there's always work to do. There is always some population to assist, and just the variety of organizations that have been built so far in the past 6 months just kind of speaks to the fact that there is a major need in our society today. And they stepped up and responded to the call to action and to implement action and to put it on the ground. And I'm so excited for them.
Wow, that sounds like you are encountering many different people from all walks of life. Now, in all of those stories that you mentioned or those businesses that you mentioned, it seems to me that our communities are really in need of wraparound services. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, and this may not be where we're going, but the fact that they all touch, some of these organizations should be partnering, and we're working on how to make that connection because they all service the same type of client in some way. So each of them could provide one person with exactly what it is that they need. Okay, so that's the type of collaboration and the type of partnerships that I communicate to anyone that I talk to, whether they're a client or not, is going and finding those other organizations that provide your missing piece so mm-hmm. that we are able to provide those wraparound services. Absolutely, because if you're struggling in need of something, you may not want to go here, there, everywhere else, or it could be a matter of you not knowing where to go. So being able to have a pool of organizations who are able to deliver exactly what it is that you need will help our society to stop hurting and to grow and to cope and to start living, like I said, the lifestyle that they know that they want to live and that they need to live.
Absolutely. So in what you just said, let me back up just a little while because I don't like to talk over people's heads, not that people are behind or anything, but why don't you explain for our listening audience, I use the term wraparound services, exactly what does that mean?
That means delivering services that responds to the needs of any given individual. So take, for example, a domestic violence victim. The one entity can provide the coping skills. They can provide the counseling sessions. They can also provide transportation to leave the household, okay? While another organization could provide the workforce development. Another organization could provide assistance with babysitting services so that this mother or this man or father can go out and find viable work so that they can start to become sustainable on their own and not dependent upon their partner or allowing their situation to keep them on the ground. Okay? So it's a matter of filling the need, figuring out what the need of that individual is and linking them to the services and the people that will provide a holistic response to whatever their crisis is so that they can overcome it.
Yes, that is very important. Now, in providing those wraparound services and seeing how important that is, that just shows our listening audience that you are open to collaboration, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And anyone who has a for-profit business or a nonprofit business, because those two worlds, they collide all the time. Mm-hmm. As a for-profit business, it is your social responsibility, is what it's called, to give back to the community in which you are doing business. So whatever your philanthropic goals are, whether it's cancer survivors or the homeless or young people education, feeding the homeless or, making sure those don't go hungry, you partner with those nonprofit organizations who are fulfilling that particular mission.
Absolutely.
So the collaboration is absolutely critical to the life of a nonprofit, especially because our funding is not always secure. But on the for-profit side, it allows their consumers to see that, oh, there's another side to this business other than just the bottom line.
Right, right. Now, some people are here or they're going to be listening because this is podcasted. Now, what would be the benefit of signing up for a nonprofit, for example, like you just talked about feeding the homeless? Now, if I'm in my kitchen and I'm making food, or I've got a kitchen that someone has donated to me and I'm making food for the homeless and I'm just doing it just because, what would be the benefit of me signing up to have a 501c3?
Sure. So in turning your passion project, because ultimately that's what it is, you would do it whether you were getting paid for it or recognized for it or not, in turning that into a viable nonprofit organization, there are some benefits to you. One, you have tax exemption, meaning all activities that are aligned with your mission and your vision, you do not get taxed on it. So the food that you buy, the utensils, the containers, even the transportation, perhaps you have a van. All of those things align with your mission activity so they're not taxed, okay? Also, mm-hmm. turning your passion project into a nonprofit organization allows you to seek sponsorship for all of those items so that you're no longer paying for the food and those supplies out of your own pocket. You can receive donations and sponsorships from the public. You can receive it from other nonprofit organizations, or you can receive support from for-profit businesses. Let's just use Walmart as an example on the for-profit side, and let's just use the Capital Area Food Bank on the nonprofit side. You because you have that nonprofit status, you're able to seek and acquire donations, which you do not have to return back. It's not a loan or any of that. You cannot do that as an individual and be successful with it, because people want that ability to give back, and it's also a tax write-off for them. You know, it's a win-win situation for everyone. Your nonprofit receives a donation, and that individual or that corporation is able to write off that expense on their taxes at the end of the year. Okay, so those are the primary reasons why you would want to take your passion project and turn it over into a viable nonprofit for the tax exemption, and also so that you can receive funding for your right. for your mission.
Absolutely. And funding is important, because the funding that you could potentially receive from the public would most likely be greater than what you could do out of your own pocket. So why not go ahead and get that extra funding so that you can move forward at a greater capacity, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's worth noting, the donations from the public are unrestricted. And what that means is you can use that money for whatever you need to use it for to operate your nonprofit. Whereas a sponsorship may be restricted in that it can only be used for a certain event, project, program, and the same thing with grants. Okay, so you want to have a fundraising mix, but you absolutely want to make sure you're receiving donations from the public, from individuals, because that money does not have any restrictions on it. Okay.
Okay. Wow, that's definitely interesting. So there's a lot of pros to doing this. Now, what are the cons?
Well, as with any business, there are always requirements. I really don't like to call them cons, because there's a cost to doing business, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit. But what appears to be challenging is the reporting requirements by the IRS. Because we are nonprofits, we serve the community, we are community-facing, which means all of the work that we do is for the community, which means we have to be 150 trillion% transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And our activity, the money that comes in, how we're using it, we have to allocate for every single penny, because remember, people are giving their disposable income, which they could use for whatever else, to fund your vision because they believe in it or whatever their reasons are. So we have to be able to account for how we're using their money. Same things with the corporation. Okay, so some people are turned off by all of the reporting requirements, the 990 that you have to fill out every year and turn over to the federal government, your state forms that you have to turn over for your personal property. That all depends on how your state locale operates, but people are turned off by that. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just a part of doing business.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And what I say is just allocate it to someone else, or allow someone else to take on that responsibility. You just hand it over to them, and then it's not a headache for you. But, you know, these things have to be done if you're going to properly handle your business.
Absolutely, absolutely. And another challenging or possible deterrent is the fact that although you're the visionary and you carry the title of CEO or executive director, you do not own a nonprofit. No one owns a nonprofit. Okay, mm-hmm. It is governed by the board of directors, who make sure the policies and procedures are in place, ensuring that the organization is moving forward according to the mission. There's a strategic plan in place. You know, they have to be responsible for the nonprofit. So what people may find challenging is, I have this amazing vision, this is my baby, this is my business, and I have only so much of a say-so mm-hmm. in how it operates. I don't own it. Whereas, let's just take, for example, Jamila Kim Consulting. This is my business. I make all the decisions. I don't answer to anyone. That's not right. how it is in the nonprofit mm-hmm. sector. The board is the governing body. So, again, that could be a challenge or perceived as a challenge for some, because they feel that there may be a struggle of power.
Mm-hmm.
And because your board is the governing body, your board does have the power to vote you out as CEO. That's another major
Even though you created it, they can vote you right out. You are fired, basically.
Yes, and it has happened, but that only happens if you are mismanaging money. You're engaging in conflicts of interest. You've forgotten the reason why you started the business in the first place. You know, you're running the business in the ground. You have to be doing some pretty egregious things in order mm-hmm. for the people that you picked to serve on your board to look at you in a way that you are unfit for the position. So it's going to take a lot for you to get yourself fired. But as long as you're operating above board, you're adhering to the mission and the vision, and you're implementing programs and activities and services that are truly having an impact, there's no reason for them to look at your performance in any other way other than positive. But absolutely. I tell all of my clients, they have the power to vote you out.
Can I jump in for a second?
Go ahead.
Sure.
One question I have in reference to this with the board, how many members is required to make up the board?
In most states, it is a minimum of three. Okay, in the state of Maryland, Virginia, you need to have at least three board members in order to say you have a board. It all depends on what your state's requirements are, but at a minimum, you want to have three. And you want to have an odd number to assist in your voting process, because with an even number, you know, you may get deadlocked on a vote. So if you find yourself in a situation where you have an even number of board members, then you absolutely want to implement the position of a board chair. And that board chair, one of their responsibilities is to break the tie or break the vote in the event of a tie. But you want at least three.
Okay, at least three. Now, another question is, let's just say the not-for-profit is 10 hours a day, this thing is open. How are the board members, or maybe we have a custodian or something like that, how are funds generated for a non-for-profit? And another question is, can a non-for-profit actually create some type of income to be able to pay the board members or a custodian or somebody that's doing something for us?
Okay, so generating funds can be done in a multitude of ways. Like I said before, you absolutely want to make sure that you have a fundraising mix. You need to have multiple streams of income the same way as the for-profit side. And let me preface this by saying that the structure of a nonprofit is very similar to that of a for-profit. You
right.
still need to have the same type of people in place. You still need to have multiple streams of income coming in. So funding for a nonprofit are sponsorship, grants from private organizations, from family organizations, from community foundations, as well as the larger grants on the federal government and the local government side. Okay. You also want to have charitable events that highlight your mission, but it could be a gala, it could be a walk, it could be a run, you can sell T-shirts, you can do a whole host of things to start bringing in multiple or creating multiple streams of income. Okay. Now, your board is volunteer, 100% volunteer. Board members do not get paid. Okay. But your board members should have a financial commitment. I can't tell you what that is because I don't know people's financial situations, but they should be invested financially into the organization as well. That is somewhat of a guaranteed income stream for you.
Got you.
So as you're creating these multiple streams of income, as you're going after grants, and because if you're new, you're not going to pull a $1 million grant in your first year. It's just not going to happen unless you know, miracles do happen, absolutely. But in being realistic, in your first year, you're not going to pull a million dollar grant because that grantor has nothing to go by. There's no sustainability that they can depend on to say, hey, this organization is going to put my money to good work. But you are able to get those small grants and small sponsorships in preparation for that $1 million grant. So So as those larger grants start to come in, then you're able to create an operating budget where you're actually able to draw a salary as a CEO, and you're able to actually hire people. But only do that when you're ready, when it's justifiable. As a nonprofit, we can operate 100% volunteer. That is another advantage, which I failed to mention, Cece. We can operate 100% volunteer.
Okay.
Walmart can't do that. Target can't do that. You can't ask anyone to come off the street and work for Target and they not pay you. Can't do that. But as a nonprofit, you can.
Well, you just gave me an idea that we'll have to talk about later. That's how all of this works. But yeah, those things that you mentioned are very, very important, because, you know, we're going to rewind a little bit. I hear people say all the time, oh, I have a nonprofit. And it's like, okay, now that I'm listening to what you're saying, no, they don't have a nonprofit. They don't own it. So people essentially need a serious training before they decide to have a nonprofit, and throughout when they have a nonprofit, because I just really feel like there's a lot of people not doing this the right way, and that's how they get themselves into trouble.
So I have another question.
Robert, before you ask the question, let her respond to what I said, because I'm pretty sure she sees people doing a lot of egregious things in their nonprofit business, and it causes them to close down.
Well, right. So one of the main, how can I put it? One of the major issues with nonprofits, or what can get a nonprofit in trouble, is not filing their 990 every year. And the 990 is just like your, think of your 1040 personally or your business taxes. This 990 form you file with the federal government every year, whatever your fiscal year is, and it's an account of your financial activity, you know, what type of revenue you got in, what were your expenses. Depending on how much your revenue was for that year will depend on the actual type of 990 form that you fill out. But if you don't do that for three consecutive years, your nonprofit status is revoked. So If you don't have the right people in place internally, meaning your secretary, treasurer, administrative assistant, those individuals who handle the administrative portion of your business, or if you yourself as a CEO don't know what the process is after you receive your 501c3 status, then you're putting yourself in a position where you are not adhering to the guidelines of your 501c3 status, and you are in, you may get revoked. Okay, so
once you get
that revocation, you have to go through the entire 501c3 process again. Not only is it bad for PR, but now the IRS really has their eyes on you because you were not doing your due diligence in following the guidelines and the processes and the steps. And so that's major. That's one of the major issues that comes, that's very common, unfortunately. And I don't think it's intentional. I think it just may simply be that they don't know that they're supposed to do this. So that's why education for me is critical. Literally, I take everything that I know and I just give it. Sometimes I may give too much, but I'm okay with that, because I would rather you know and not have this amazing vision get shut down, or bad PR, or the IRS is now auditing you or looking at you in a different light because you did not know what the process is. You do not know what your job entails. Okay.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. That's what I was talking about, that training that's needed. Now, Robert, what is it that you were going to ask?
So, say you get a wild idea that, I had an idea. Let me just go there. I had an idea to actually have a non-for-profit, but then within a non-for-profit, have an event that was a training the young people for entrepreneurship, dealing with the public, but selling items that were making a product part of the actual training. Is that something that could be done?
So yes and no. So you can be as creative as you would like with your activities. You just have to make sure that your activities align with your mission. So if your mission is to build young entrepreneurs, and if that process includes services and products, and you want to teach them how to create that product or service and sell it, then yes.
Okay, now, what are the legalities with the monies that are generated from that?
For one, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an accountant. So I speak on what I know. So this question is based upon not from a legal standpoint or an accounting standpoint. It's more so of a process standpoint. So any funding that comes in or is generated for the nonprofit, it goes back into the nonprofit, whether it is to create another piece of that program that we're talking about right now, whether it is allowing your young people to go to the next level and perhaps showcase their product or service on a grander scale in front of some major people, but it needs to come back into your mission somehow.
Okay, that's great.
You could create some sort of stipend for your young people. Maybe they have challenges in getting physically to the location. You could maybe perhaps give them a stipend to help them with, you know, Metro or whatever you all have out there as far as your transportation is concerned, or maybe you just partner with Uber or Lyft, and I don't know. I'm just speaking right off the top of my head right now. But as long as your activities are mission-minded, you can be as creative as you would like. Any legal questions, if you think you're not able to think it through or there may be some sort of conflict of interest, at that point, you want to first go to your board and get their opinions on it, because ultimately, these are the types of conversations that you would have with your board members, but also seek some legal counsel as well and talk to an accountant, okay? You have to make sure you have the right people at the table.
Gotcha.
Okay, so with that being said, now you are a professional and expert in your lane, of course, which is wonderful that you know that and you don't just throw out information. So when you are helping people put together their nonprofits, what do you suggest that they have as far as people on board with them? Like you just mentioned, an accountant, an attorney. But, you know, we can get an accountant and attorney, but, you know, how do you know which one to get? Because I could go to an accountant and they may not be well versed in my area. Therefore, they really don't know what they're doing and they can flub through it. So what type of accountant or an attorney should one seek out?
You need to seek out both professions who are very well versed in the nonprofit sector.
Okay.
Because there are differences between for-profit and nonprofit. So you, in interviewing or vetting them, they need to have nonprofit experience.
Okay. That makes sense. And I said that because, you know, I've gone to have my taxes done before. And at the time, I was a business owner and they were not aware of all of the write-offs. And I would usually end up getting a very decent refund and write-off, you know. But when they got done with me, I owed them like $900. So I knew that was wrong. So it's very important that you listeners out there seek out the proper advice from an advisor that is very experienced, like she said, in the nonprofit sector. Now, there are people that are running their nonprofits now. And there are people running nonprofits, like I said before, that are not going so well, you know, like maybe they've lost the vision. Maybe they have gotten tired. Maybe they don't really have the sufficient help that they thought that they would have. What kind of suggestions do you have for them?
They need to reassess.
Mm-hmm.
But that assessment mm-hmm. may not be internal, because that's what the problem could be. It could be that everyone has kind of exhausted their ideas, and they're not able to look at the current challenges in a fresh light. So there are things called board retreats where the board members come together for a retreat, and it could be anyone in the organization, but, you know, let's just say you take your board and you go off on a retreat. It could be at some cottage or hotel, or it could be right there in the office, and you bring someone on the outside who has assessed the organization, who is able to provide some constructive feedback on what's going well, what's not going well, and ways to fix it, okay? The SWOT analysis works perfectly in the nonprofit world and the for-profit world, okay? So I would begin with performing an internal SWOT analysis if the nonprofit was not ready to go out and seek outside assistance. Determine the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Start having the conversation, because I guarantee you, once you start assessing those attributes, you're going to start to see what's lacking. You may not know how to fix it, but if you're able to at least identify it, you can then start to work on a resolution. And if internally that can't happen, that's when you're going to have to seek outside support, whether it's a consultant, if it's another nonprofit who focuses on board development, and Board Source is an excellent resource that I use all the time. They have lots of free information. But sometimes we have to go outside of ourselves to figure out what's going on internally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because if you're inside the picture, you have a hard time seeing outside the frame. And that's, you know, like you mentioned before, with any business. But when you're dealing with your baby, as you called it, your passion, and things are not going right, I mean, it's just so easy to just say, okay, I kind of want to throw in the towel. But you don't have to do that. If you're out there and you have a nonprofit, there are solutions for you. I mean, there are definitely solutions for you to just kind of reassess things, like Jamila was talking about. And Jamila, I'm pretty sure that you offer consultation for people who are already utilizing a 501c3, correct?
Yes. So I focus on startups, meaning 1 to 5 years, is because that's the space in which I operate. So okay. I can speak on what I know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We wouldn't want you to do anything else. That's good.
Right. So yes, I provide nonprofit assessments. And what that process is you tell me in the intake process, what are your challenges? What are you struggling with? What do you see as a challenge, as an obstacle right now? And once I get that feedback, I take their mission, their vision, some of the activities that they've already done. I also ask them what they have done internally to fix these problems. And then I provide my feedback, and I provide an action plan for the way forward, you know, to do this, to do that. And it has been beneficial for the clients that I have worked with. Okay, it could be as simple as reworking your programs. It could be that simple. Mm-hmm. It could be as simple as introducing a new fundraising tactic or strategy, rather, I should say. It could be in your branding. It could be in how you're telling your story. You know, it could be as far as board development training, because that board development is critical. They are at the nucleus of the organization. So if you don't have a strong board, your nonprofit is going to struggle. And when I say that, as the CEO, if you feel as if you don't have a lot of help or a lot of support, you're going to take on everything personally on your shoulders, and you're going to get burnt out. You're going to get frustrated, and you're not able to provide a solution to your own problem. So maybe board development is the answer, but whatever the situation is, I assess and I provide my feedback, and it's up to them to implement or not. I can't really force them to implement, but I do provide them with a strategy for the way forward.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, that's very important, because strategy is everything. I mean, you could be in the problem, but if you don't have a strategy to get out, I mean, you may just kind of dying the problem. So definitely want to make sure that people know about that. Now, moving forward, so what are the steps? Let's say I'm a person and I'm like, oh, yes, I'm going to, we'll use the homeless thing again. I'm going to seek out your services, Ms. Kemp, because I want to start my 501c3 to feed the homeless. I mean, I enjoy doing that, but it's kind of burning me out and I'd like to do more and I just want to go forward. So tell me, what are the steps?
The steps of starting a nonprofit, it's actually a self-assessment first. You have to know why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have to know who you're going to serve, who's your constituent base. And I know you just gave me an example, but for the listeners out there who are not at that level yet, they just have this idea, but they don't know how to move forward. Mm-hmm. So you have the why, you have the who, and then you have the how. How are you going to serve them? Okay. Once you're able to answer those questions, and what I call that is my declarative phase, we're declaring some things. We're declaring mm-hmm. What the nonprofit is, who you're going to serve, and how you're going to serve them. Once we have overcome that, we have to then create mission and vision statement, and we have to get into our legal process of filing the articles of incorporation with the state in which you're going to be doing business and incorporating the nonprofit. Bylaws have to be prepared. You have to seek out those board members and your officers. And then you file your 501c3 status, which is Form 1023 or Form 1023-EZ. So it's declaring what you're going to do, planning your team, picking your board and your officers, like I said, and then ultimately filing for your 501c3 status.
Okay. Well, that sounds like you might need a little hand-holding. I mean, the way that you said it, it sounded quick, but I mean, still for
no, it's not quick. It's not quick.
Well, hand holding. Let's go ahead and hold some hands then. So our listeners need to come to you. So the first thing they do is have a consultation with you, right?
Yes. The initial consultation assesses where you're at in your journey because that will let me know where we need to pick up. Some clients are just ready to go. They have everything in order. I mean, board members, officers, vision, mission statement. You know, they just need the legal part done, the articles of incorporation, the bylaws, and the filing the 501c3 status. And then there are others on the other end of the spectrum that just have an idea. They don't know mm-hmm. what to do with it quite yet, but they know that they love to serve and that they want to help this particular population of people. It's at that point where I take everything that's brewing in their brain right now, get it out, put it on paper, and we structure it. We put some sentences to it, and we realize what we're going to be actually putting into action. You know, I go through a whole mastermind class, which is a deep dive into the nonprofit sector where I cover a whole host of topics so they can start to understand, and that's where the education piece comes in. So, yes, the initial consultation is the first step, and then the next step is, depending on that response, from that call, we then decide where you fall into my programs as to which level you need to come in at, whether it is the hand-holding, which I love to do, or it's just, you know, just finishing out and just closing the loop on a couple of things, tying up some strings so you can really get started.
Okay. Well, for those out there that have just joined us, we are talking to Ms. Kemp, Jamila Kemp. She is talking to us about 501c3 startups, and she has a business called It Takes Two, Inc. And
yes, that's my nonprofit. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and she's ready to help you. If you're looking to start your nonprofit, she helps you for up to 5 years. Is that what it is? You help them up to 5 years? That's like
yes, yep.
Going to high
yeah,
school
once I get
4 years
into...
and 1 year after. Okay. Okay.
Well, let me clarify that. So I work with, so my niche is startups, okay? Mm-hmm. But because I'm at my five-year mark, like I said, I'm operating in my lane. As my nonprofit continues to grow and I'm able to experience some things and learn some new things, then you know, it'll grow, the business will grow with me. Another point of clarification is Jamila Kemp Consulting is my for-profit where I assist with the nonprofit startup, and It Takes Two Incorporated is my personal nonprofit that I started 5 years ago. And I actually just started my son's business as well. So I just want to make sure there's a clear distinction between the two.
Yes, thank you for that clarity. Absolutely. Now, your son, you are a single mom and you have a son. How old is your son?
He is 12.
He's 12 and he's just started a business with you. What business, what have you guys started?
So he has a student athlete clothing line called Be Epic, Be Savage. And the message is academics over athletics. He's a student athlete. He's been playing football since he was sixth grade, but school always comes first. He's always known that. So this is more than a clothing line. It's a movement. It's a message to our young people and those who support our young people to not focus on the sport, but to focus on the academics. So he has T-shirts and hoodies and things along those lines. So, and also we're creating a legacy for him because the same way that we can pass down generational curses, we can also pass down generational blessings as well. So this is his legacy. This is something that he'll have always. And my prayer is that it grows and it's, you know, he's another Under Armour. That's really what the vision is he's another Under Armour with a true message to our young people, our student athletes in particular.
That's powerful right there, because look at the age. He's at that preteen stage where they're like alert and listening to all of their peers. So if he's projecting that type of communication to his peers, I mean, the next generation or his generation has some great hope. You know, if they decide that academics is more important than sports, I mean, they can definitely take on the world.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's about.
Wow. Well, I'm very excited for him. So why don't you let our listeners know, because again, this is podcasted and you will get calls randomly out of nowhere. Like I was on that show 6 months ago and they'll still be calling you. So what information do you need to give for them to reach out to you?
Sure. So you can connect with me on all social media sites. I'm on Facebook as my first and last name, Jamila Kemp, J-A-E-M-E-L-L-A-H. Last name is Kemp, K-E-M as in Mary, P as in Paul. Jamila Kemp Consulting can be found on Facebook as well. I am on Instagram, I am on Twitter, and I'm also on LinkedIn as Jamila Kemp. To connect with me via my website, it is the entire business name, JamilaKempConsulting.com.
Perfect. Well, you all reach out to her so that you can get your nonprofit on big time, because she is the best person that I know that can get that started for you. Jamila, do you have any last words? Because what we're going to do is take you out with your YouTube video.
Okay. So, and that's the perfect segue to tell your story as often as possible to as many people as possible. People relate to the impact. Great. You have a nonprofit. Awesome. You're getting funding in. Amazing. But if your nonprofit is not creating an impact, you might as well just close the doors.
Wow, that's powerful.
So regardless of what your mission is, please just make sure you're making an impact. It could be five people, but those five people you touch could change the trajectory of their life because you decided to speak life to them in however you choose to do that through your nonprofit. So impact is my word for 2017. That's what I would like to share with the audience.
Wow. Well, we definitely appreciate the impact that you've made on our program today. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope to hear from you again. Feel free to come back at any time to tell us about any events or any new things that you have going on. But we hope to talk to you here on BIB Radio soon. And we're going to, again, like I said, take you out with your YouTube video. So, Scotty, if you could play that.
I wanted to start a business to help people like me, parents trying to finance their children's education. At UMUC, I learned everything I needed to start my own company. One day, I got this letter from the IRS, and usually that's not a good thing. But in this case, it was a great thing. I was CEO of my own company. That was my moment.
Get started creating your moments at UMUC. Visit umuc.edu/jk.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, everybody. We are back. Thank you for joining us for this last hour of BIB Radio. We are having a dynamic show. We just ended the portion of the program with Miss Jamila Kemp. She has an organization called It Takes Two and Jamila Kemp Consulting. And she's got a lot going on. If you all are interested in starting a nonprofit, definitely give her a call so she can do a consultation with you. I haven't personally spoken with anyone concerning 501c3 in that way. I really appreciate the fact that her service offers wraparound services because, like I said before, in our community, there is so much that is needed. You know, you can't just really attack one problem. You have to kind of go at it many different ways. And in my experience in 501c3 work, you know, I haven't had my own. But when we deal with other people trying to deal with our cultural issues, whatever they're calling issues, they don't offer necessarily those appropriate wraparound services. So when I see somebody doing the work that she's doing in our community, I have to applaud her. And I would tell you all, she's one of the best I've ever seen. So make sure that you reach out to her and listen to the show again. If you need more clarity, information, just give her a call. Robert, what did you think about that?
That was some great information. Definitely, I'm going to be reaching out. We're going to be collaborating with the sister on some projects for sure. But, yeah, that was some really great information for our listening audience, for those who may consider going and starting a 501c3 and didn't know that information there. So that's what BIB is all about, man. Good.
Yeah, we deliver the good information, the useful information. Well, for me, it kind of, you know, people get afraid. They get afraid of because, you know, things that they've heard in the past and, oh, you know, if you do this, then the government will come after you. And, you know, people, I mean, I guess they have justifiable fears, but at the same time, like I always say, you cannot base your soon coming experience off of something somebody else did. You know, you got to experience that thing for yourself. It doesn't mean don't take their information to heart and you know, kind of move wisely. But I mean, maybe they had some stuff going on in the background that you didn't know about, you know, and that situation is not your situation. If you thought about opening a nonprofit, the least you could do is give Miss Jamila Kemp a call and let her do a consultation with you. That's, again, why we're here. We're providing this information to you so that you can get, you know, get the help that you need. So what we are doing now is we're going to segue into our last hour where we will be talking to our next guest. And her name is Ms. Buchana Turner, and she is of LTNA LLC. Luchana, if you are ready to come on the program, please press star star. Anybody listening, if you would like to speak, please press star star so that I can see you there. All right. So it looks like we have someone on. Would you like to speak?
Hello, sweetie. This is Luciana. How are you?
Oh, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, good. So I am ever so thankful for you coming on at this time, because this is the perfect interview to go behind Ms. Kemp. So let our listeners know what you do, Ms. Turner.
Well, I am the founder and owner of essentially two companies. One we'll talk about tonight is LTNA Group, and I do government contracting consulting from an audit perspective.
Okay, now before you go forward, are you in a strange area or are you on a cell phone?
I am actually in voice over IT. Are you getting an echo?
It's kind of garbly.
Is this better?
Robert, what'd you say?
No, it's not.
I can call in from a landline.
Yes, that is preferred. So you can hang up and call back from the landline, and we will wait for you right here, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so as we wait, she's going to call us back in, and we're going to start that all over again so she can tell us what it is that she does, and I think you all will be pleasantly surprised. Okay, so are you there?
Does this matter?
Yes, ma'am, and I see your picture. How cute. So let's start over again. Now, let's let our listeners know what it is that you do and who you are.
As I was started, my name is Luciana Turner, and I own the LTNA Group, which is I help businesses get started and stay compliant in doing government contracting. I have over 12 years experience working for one of the top government contractors, and I just decided it was time to share my knowledge with my small business partners, and thus LTNA was born.
Wow, okay. So with that being said, if I wanted to, well, how would I know if I needed or wanted a government contract? What does that look like? What is a government contract? Like, what type of situation is that?
Well, the government buys everything. They buy everything from gloves to janitorial services. If you're a curriculum development, if you're a specialist of some sort, they buy your service. And, you know, I'm using government as a broad term because we're talking state, local, or federal.
Okay.
And I always say this. Government contracting is an excellent way to provide that extra revenue stream for your business. And, you know, you're dealing with and selling to the largest customer in the world. You know, the U.S. government, I think, is the third top consumer in the world. So that's the third largest customer that you can service. And from a sustainability viewpoint, every business, you know, we keep hearing multiple lines of revenue, multiple lines of revenue. Well, government contracting is an excellent vehicle to bring in that other line of revenue.
Okay. Well, I mean, that sounds, it sounds wonderful, because as an entrepreneur, you're always searching for that next stream of income that is going to be sustainable. Now, I'll give a for instance. If I have a cleaning business, what type of government contract could I be searching for?
If you own a cleaning business, you can look, your local government hires businesses to clean up the government office buildings. The Army hire janitorial services to clean out their hangars and their cargo carriers. You know, so those are just two examples, one on the state level, one on the federal level, of how you can market your janitorial service.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, that's like a whole nother level, because when I talk about, now I do have a cleaning business, as a matter of fact, but I'm not doing it right now, but I do have a license. Now, if I'm just a regular person, because I know a lot of people who do cleaning businesses, and they're kind of scrounging. They're scrounging for clients. They're scrounging for clients that will stay with them, because we know people are always looking for the cheaper price. So it sounds like if I have a cleaning business, I should definitely be seeking out government contracts.
I will say that it's a viable option. It's funny you use a cleaning business as an example, because one of my first clients back in 2013 was a cleaning company. And
wow.
She came to me because she was seeking strategy, financial advice, because she could not understand why she would be selected for her technical proposal, you know, her scope of work, but she was getting rejected because of her pricing. And most small businesses fail because of pricing. They don't price themselves well at all. And I took one look at her pricing sheet, and I'm like, okay, it's just not right. So mm-hmm. when you're going into, you know, there was a deviation, but it isn't. And the point that if you're scrounging for clients, and you're kind of struggling in this particular market because everybody goes after the same people. So that's when I say think out the box mm-hmm. and go after those businesses or those opportunities that there aren't as many businesses pursuing. Mm-hmm. For example, I was just doing some research for a training that I'm hosting. There are several RFPs out on state and federal level where they're just looking for janitorial service. They're looking for somebody to come in, clean their offices, you know, like I said, clean their jumbo jet, and because they don't want to do it. They don't want to take personnel to do it. They don't want to hire personnel just to clean an office. And, I don't want to make that seem like cleaning offices isn't important, so somebody can come clean mine.
Right.
But, you know, so they just contract those services out.
Wow. Okay. This is so broad to me, you know, when I think about this, because again, there are people that are struggling in domestic situations, you know, trying to have cleaning businesses, trying to have perhaps home care businesses or child care businesses, when they could simply be going after government contracts. I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, it sounds like it's something that is always going to be needed, right?
Well, unless our government goes away, and contrary to popular belief, I do not believe the government is going to fold up anytime soon, you know, however you feel about that. But
all right. It's okay. Go ahead.
We will always have some form of government, whether it exists the way it exists today or it transforms into something else. We will always have some type of government. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we will always have some need to provide external service to our government. And for every person that I hear yelling, we need smaller government, we need smaller government, well, that translates into a lot of times you end up with more government contracts because the work doesn't go away.
Right.
You just decide you don't want to pay a government employee to do it.
Wow. Well, you know, that says a whole lot. Now, if I wanted to seek out, we'll be a cleaner again. If I wanted to seek out these contracts, where would I even be looking?
Now, therein lies the rub. There are multiple sources for government contracting. I actually covered this topic a couple of months ago in one of my trainings, where every state, city, county, parish, municipality, whatever, has a procurement site.
Mm-hmm.
And that site contains a list of every contract that they're putting out, which is an RFP or request for proposal, every contract that they've ever issued, whether awarded or unawarded. So you always start with your local government, go into their procurement site and see what opportunities are there.
Now, is this like something that's hard to muddle through, or do I need like a expert help to even look at this, or is it kind of self-explanatory?
It is something that can become overwhelming if mm-hmm. you do not have a plan of action.
Okay.
I was, you know, I talked to a lot of people. And, well, one, I host a contracting chatter webinar, and I get emails from people all the time. I have all this information. I don't know what to do with it. That's because we need to form a strategy. We need to have a plan of action. What mm-hmm. is your intent? What are you looking for? How large do you want to start? You know, they have procurement from $10,000 to millions of dollars.
Wow.
So, you know, we have to have a plan. We just can't say, oh, I'm going to get a government contract and go running out there. And then you start getting confused, and then you kind of get action. You might get a contract, and then you get muddled in because there's no strategy. You have to have a plan. You have to know where you're trying to go, where you're starting from, and then make those plans and take those steps.
Okay, so that's where you come in. So let's just say I'm a cleaning person again. And, you know, I listen to this program and I'm like, oh, I don't need her. I don't need her at all. Let me go to my government. Let me go to my local government, my state government and the federal. And let me get all these listservs, and they'll email me all this stuff. And then before you know it, I'm inundated with all this paperwork and I just don't even know where to start. And then I end up calling you and saying, oh, Miss Turner, I heard you on BIB radio and I have all these stacks of papers with contracts that I want to do. Can you help me? What would you do with that person?
The first thing I would ask that person is, what are their end objectives?
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeking to do? Do you want to have 3 contracts? Do you want to have 10 contracts? Do you want to have $500,000 in business? Do you want $100,000 in business? What is your end goal? What is your end objective?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's important. That's important.
Yeah. And then the second question is, at what level can you fulfill?
Mm-hmm.
I went on a tirade about this. I did a Facebook Live and there were many tirades. Somebody had to pull me back. Because Everybody talked about the 7-figure contract. Well, there's steps to get there. There's a 7-figure foundation that goes with that contract. And the foundation begins with knowing where you're going. What's your plan? What does it look like? Because my business goals and dreams and aspirations are different from yours.
Right.
You know, and nothing wrong with saying, you know, I have a janitorial company. I only want 5 employees. And with my 5 employees, we can service about $300,000-$400,000 in contracts. And I'm comfortable, they're comfortable, and I'm happy. And you know what? That's your vision. That's your goal. Then you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to do.
Right.
I think far too often people get caught up in comparison and they feel like their vision is too small, so they don't ever act.
Wow. Well, that sounds like when they get caught up like that, they kind of need to cycle back around and just go back to foundationally what their initial vision was, because I think you're right. because it goes along with that whole thing, keeping up with the Joneses. Like, I may see somebody doing something similar to what I'm doing, and then I see what they're doing, and I'm not doing what they're doing, so then I feel like I'm not doing enough, and then I end up exhausting myself because that wasn't even my vision. And that's where the problem comes in, because a lot of people don't realize we may be doing something similar, but because we're two different people, we're doing two different things, you know.
And you know, Cece, I would take it a step further. Mm-hmm. We may be doing the exact same thing for different sets of people.
Mm-hmm.
This requires different action.
Right.
And that is the key. Even if we're targeting more corporations, I want a corporate contract. Well, corporate is a large umbrella. You may be trying to go for Walmart, Wegmans. I may be going for Chase, Citibank.
Mm-hmm.
Same customer type, different customer profile.
Right.
So this comparative narrative that, and, you know, the cloning that seems to be going on where everybody looks, sounds, and breathes alike is the reason why so many people are floundering, and then they're suffocating in their own feelings of inadequacy if they would just stop looking to the left and to the right and focus on their vision.
Right.
And speaking from, you know, transparency, when I first got started, I was drowning and suffocating in a feeling of inadequacy because I was stuck looking at other people. And then I had to tap myself on the shoulder. Wait a minute. That's not what you're doing. You're over here. This is your lane. And then when I got in my lane and started performing in my excellence, I started making traction.
That's important. And let me just say to you, I don't know anybody doing what you're doing. So you are doing big things, okay? That's why I asked you on this program today, because, you know, not many people know about securing government contracts. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are trying to make it happen, that are struggling to make it happen, but have not yet tapped into that different dynamic of securing government contracts. And if somebody calls you and they want to do that, what is the first thing you do? Are you doing a free consultation, or how does that work?
Well, I do offer a 15-minute consultation. Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of get to know where you are. Mm-hmm. Because it's important for me to understand where you are so mm-hmm. that I know if I can help you or not.
Mm-hmm.
I do a bi-monthly webinar called the LTNA Contracting Chatter, where I cover, it's an hour long, I cover a topic within government contracting just from the perspective of sharing knowledge and educating.
Mm-hmm.
So I always, you know, when you do that 15-minute call and you're still not sure, sometimes I'll send you to my Chatter website and tell you, know what, start there. You know, mm-hmm. all of the episodes up until last month are posted up there. Take mm-hmm. a look at it and review each of them. Write notes so that you can get a direction. Because sometimes the problem is we don't know what question to ask, so we don't feel like we should call anybody to seek help because we feel like we're wasting their time because you don't know what to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a repository of information that kind of gets your wheels spinning to say, okay, now I know what questions to ask. Now I know where kind of an idea of how I want to approach it. Now let's talk for this 15 minutes to maximize it. And there is a brief questionnaire that I have before the call, so that kind of gives me some background before we get on the phone so we can maximize that time. And then we can decide from there what a partnership or work relationship will look like.
Okay. Well, I definitely want the people to reach out to you about these contracts. Now, Robert, you haven't met him. He's on the line. He's the co-host of this show. He is thinking about government contracts. Do you have some questions about government contracts, Robert? I can't hear you. I'm sure
you can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good evening, young lady. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. No, I'm just paying very close attention and taking a few notes, but not really interested in government contracts myself, in reference to anything that I'm doing in business. But the information has been, I'm getting an earful. This is some stuff that I hadn't thought of or hadn't been thinking of, but definitely some stuff that's got me thinking more in different areas, looking at other opportunities. So, no, I don't have any questions at the moment for you, though.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were interested in, like, learning about contracts, like in the trucking business or something.
Well, not at the moment. I do have a big 24-foot outside, but I'm just paying attention right now. I'm taking it all in, and you know, it's always having options of different ways of doing things. So.
Okay, well, perfect. I just didn't want to leave out your question, so
no problem.
No problem at all. Okay, so, Shauna, tell me now, what would you say is the most untapped industry right now that people just kind of overlook?
I think people are not valuing training.
Okay.
And when I say training, I'm talking about leadership development, change management. I look at political news with two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it from the eye of the American citizen, but I also look at it from the eye of a government contractor.
Okay.
And there are a lot of different things that are transferring now in the political arena, even in our court system, that I think people, you know, the gentleman was saying he has a 24-footer. Well, FEMA contracts people to deliver goods to disaster areas. Now, it may not be something you want to do all the time, so they do have what they refer to as on-call opportunities. You go through the procurement process, you get selected, and you're chosen when a need arrives. So the next hurricane hits, he may be one of those on-call contractors to go ship goods and food and whatever clothing to that next disaster area. So there's, you know, a multiple, you know, president now has this thing about transforming the government. Well, change management is really hot right now. Not hot from there's 5 million contracts, but hot from the perspective of there's an interest out there. I actually emailed 3 RFPs to a couple of my clients and a business partner because I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then the RFPs were change management and organizational restructuring. So those are things, you know, people think, well, I'm a professor or I do this in corporate, nobody would buy my service. You'd be surprised.
Right. And I think that's a big thing right there. They'd be surprised because you even talked about selling education or doing education for the government.
There's a couple of RFPs out there. If you are special education, you know, that's your passion, that's your purpose. I know within the state of Virginia, they just released an RFP today looking for somebody to come in and structure an education curriculum and platform for special needs.
Mm. Wow.
And that was a 3-year contract. I was trying to think if I knew anybody that did that so I can email it to them. But
right.
So it's there. The opportunities are there. I just think sometimes people look at the paperwork, they hear the horror stories, and they get intimidated or they get put off and they just don't pursue it. And education, you know, I'm not a big fan of Freebie University and YouTube College, but they are excellent places to get started when you're doing your research. And then you graduate to the procurement website, do some research through there. And then you kind of start developing that plan, and then you pick up the phone and you call a contracting specialist, you know.
You tell them to call you.
Well, they call me.
Yeah, this is about you.
And you know, and it's funny that you say that, because like I do finance and strategy. I did the compliance part, which is the audit piece. When the auditors come knocking on your door, that's what I did. And that's what I impart to my clients and my students. Now, I partner with somebody, she does business development in the federal space. I can do it, but I prefer to operate in my excellence.
Sometimes
you need more than one person to give you guidance. You need guidance in your business developing or marketing, then I always refer people to her. But when it comes time to set up those policy procedures and create that strategy, then that's where I come in at.
Okay. Now, of course, we're talking on all levels of contracting. So if I'm in the state of, let's say, Washington, I'm in Washington State, you have the ability to help me secure those contracts in Washington State, although you're in, are you in Maryland?
I'm actually in Charlotte now.
Oh, you're in Charlotte. Okay. But you were in Maryland before, right? Okay. I wasn't envisioning things. Okay, perfect. So if I, we haven't talked in so long. Okay, so if I'm in Washington and you are where you are, you can definitely help me secure those contracts. You're still tapped into those resources to get me whatever I need. Right. Okay. I mean, you'd be surprised the things that are like roadblocks in people's mind. You know, they'll say, okay, well, she's somewhere else and she can't help me. So it's important that our listening audience knows that you can connect with her and she'll help you right where you are in securing those government contracts. You just have to reach out to her. And another thing I'll say, don't be surprised if she could actually help you in whatever industry you're in. There is probably a government contract there waiting for you. Am I right?
That is so true. Okay. There are contracts out there, you know, for anybody doing legal business, there's a contract out there for you.
Okay. Right. Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio Network. Our show is called BIB Radio. Support blacktalkmedia.org. We'll be right back in just a second.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, everybody, let me correct that once again. It's blacktalkmediaproject.org. I keep leaving off that project for some reason, but definitely support this network. You're listening to all this information. Our programming runs 24/7. Lots of great hosts, lots of great radio programming for you to listen to and be enriched from your people. You know, no interruption from anybody crazy. So definitely support us here, blacktalkmediaproject.org. So what we're doing now is we are talking to Miss Luciana Turner. Of course, I call her Shauna because that's her nickname. And she's talking to us about contracts, securing government contracts. Now, me personally, I would really like to see more of us secure these government contracts because it's just one of those things that I think that our people don't really know about, you know, the, like purchasing real estate in a different way, like Robert teaches us in an unconventional way. Government contracts. If you have a couple of government contracts rolling in, you never know where that can take you financially. Now, what did you say the numbers are, Shauna? Sometimes you could start out from where to where?
There are contracts out there as low as $10,000 to $15,000, and then they go up from there. You know, every state has what they call small procurement, and they're usually from $10,000 to $50,000. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, then you get into other types of purchasing up to the millions of dollars.
Wow. Now, that is amazing. I definitely want our listening audience to reach out to you and get the proper information. What is that website you said you had?
Well, for the bi-monthly webinars, that's contractingchatter.com. And there's a lot of good information in there where we talk about getting started in contracting, developing a business plan. And we did a talk a couple of weeks ago on demystifying government certification. You know, here's another information. There are set-asides for minority businesses. There are set-asides for small businesses. There are set-asides for small minority businesses. So there are opportunities out there if you want to kind of get into contracting, but you don't want to be the prime. And when I say the prime, I'm saying you're the one running the project. Then you get on these lists, and then you can be chosen as a subcontractor. Or you can reach out to these companies and ask them, say, hey, I see you're going after this contract. I do XYZ, and I have this certification. There's a requirement for you to meet that goal. Let's talk. Because, you know, now, a lot of people did a lot of fighting to kind of open the field in contracting to us. So I say let's take advantage of that and not let somebody's battle on our behalf go to waste.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting that you say that, because, again, that's one of those things that we just don't know about. And, I mean, I know for myself, I would like to look into government contracts for cleaning because, you know, we just need to pick these things apart and look at them differently. If you have a cleaning or janitorial business, you could simply, I always say this, you could get the labor-ready people. You can contract the labor-ready people and work these government contracts. Don't you agree?
There's opportunity to do it that way. There's also some unconventional ways of doing business with the government. You know, you talked about earlier you have a child care facility and you're trying to increase your headcount. Well, some government buildings have spaces that they will lease to child care providers, and then you have access to all of their employees.
That's wonderful.
There's one instance I know of where they were leasing, they subleased the space at a reduced rate because their intent was to give their employees options for child care that didn't distract them from work and it increased productivity. And that's how the daycare ended up inside of a federal building. And 90% of their children are the employees that work in that building.
Right. So then you would always have business. There wouldn't be any dry or downtime because you are facilitating the childcare for the people in that building. And who doesn't have children? That's a wonderful idea. My goodness. Have any of you ever thought about that? I mean, if you are out there and you're in the childcare industry, what if you could secure a building full of government employees with children, and then you would always have spots filled in your child care? I mean, if you're in child care, you know that that could be a problem sometimes. You know, you may be servicing a family that has like four children, and all of a sudden they move to Florida, then you got four spots. But if you've got this government funded facility, most likely you will have a waiting list. So, I mean, that is an excellent, excellent idea. I'm telling you, I'm just in tune to this right now. Now, what we need to do, Shauna, is we need to let the people know how to get a hold of you so that they can find out more about government contracts, and so that they can stay linked into what it is that you're doing on a weekly and monthly basis concerning the government contracts and getting them the help that they need.
Okay. Well, if they want to get on my list, and I email my list all of our events and notices about the chatter, they can actually text their name, email address, and phone number to 980-216-8728. And if they put in their chatter, then I know they want to be a part of my chatter mailing list. If they just put in their LTNA, then they'll just go onto my primary mailing list.
Okay, perfect. Now, in closing, do you have any last remarks for our listening audience? Because like I told our last guest, you know, this is podcasted, so you may get calls like 6 months from now, you know, because this information is still going around. So what advice do you have?
My primary advice to any business, small business entering the government space or thinking about it is don't allow the fear of the unknown to lead your steps. I know it can be kind of daunting, the paperwork or the perceived paperwork or the perceived complications, because, you know, people try to make everything seem like rocket science, and that's because they don't know the answer. So don't allow fear to overcome your decision to move forward. Put that to the side and think vision. What is my vision? What is my plan to go with my vision? And then take the next step.
Well, it sounds like you are prepared to help them with their vision and going forward. So I definitely want them to be able to reach out to you soon so that they can get those government contracts rolling in. You never know when FEMA might need you, Robert. But yeah. So we definitely want to make sure. I mean, you guys, seriously, I mean, we sit around and twiddle our thumbs. We sit around stressing about like how to earn more money, how to get an extra stream of income. Why not tap into this information? It doesn't have to be a big scary thing. Just call Shauna and ask her, like, you know, for my industry, what is there out there? And she can definitely deliver a wonderful consultation to you. So just get a hold of her. Well, Shauna, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We so appreciate you. If you have anything come up in the near future, you need a commercial, let us know, because this network can definitely assist you. But we want to tell you thank you and good night. And we will talk to you again really soon. Okay.
Okay. And thank you for inviting me on your show tonight.
Okay. We'll talk to you again really soon. Okay.
Okay. You too.
All right. So that was Miss Luciana Turner, and she is of L&T. Oh my gosh. Her thing says something different. Turner and Associates. And she is there to assist you with your government contracting needs. Let me make sure I get it right. The LTNA group. Okay. So she will help you stay in compliance with everything that you need concerning those contracts. So why don't we do this? You know, let's segue into something else. So, Robert, last week we talked about the laundry detergent business. And so we wanted to kind of clarify some things because we want to make sure that everybody has the appropriate information. So, Robert, in the laundry detergent business, we know that our people have all kinds of questions. So the laundry detergent is regular detergent. What types of detergent are these?
I need that. Let me help you with that question, because I'm gonna assume that you're asking, are you talking brand or more specifically, what do you mean?
Okay, so I'm talking about what are they comparable to,
Well, the detergent was manufactured or is manufactured by a company that actually sells to larger facilities like hotels, hospitals, near and around Chicago. They ship out all over the United States. These 5-gallon buckets are usually for, you know, much bigger use than a residential use, but it was a very practical thing to actually bring to the marketplace in the residential, on the residential side, simply because of the cost factor. The detergent is a high efficiency detergent. That's the HE that you see on your detergent bottles in all the stores. It is HE, high efficiency, and it is compatible to any Tide product or Gain product. It was designed like that for, again, for hospitals. I guess it was because they could cut costs on certain areas, like any other business would, cut costs but not compromising the quality of the product. So that keeps companies or manufacturers like the one that we're dealing with in business, because big companies, hotels, resorts, those type of places that have a lot of rooms and bedding or whatever, work clothes, they need to be able to cut costs. So that's how this product is even possible to bring to the marketplace.
Right, right. So it's comparable to a Tide or Gain. So it's manufactured in such a way so that it can be used industrial-wise, like you said, hospitals and that type of thing. Because if you were to purchase a 5-gallon bucket of Tide or Gain, it's going to cost you a whole lot of money. So just like everything else in the industry, there are people who replicate these things, and it's not illegal. It's not some kind of acid or poison. It's real laundry detergent created by a manufacturing company, a rather large manufacturing company. And they like actually, Robert.
This company actually makes hair care products, private label hair care products for different companies. Some of their products are actually in some of the beauty supply places. So this is not any type of bootleg or illegitimate, as you said, thing. This is, again, a product that was designed for industries that use the detergents on a larger level, and they sell them by the totes. And a tote is a 275-gallon container. Those are the ones that mainly go out to certain hospitals or certain hotels, and they may, and their own employee staff, you know, pour out through a sprout or whatever, 5-gallon buckets, whatever they need to use, or they may have a system that actually runs into the 275-gallon tote that distributes detergent to do the laundry or whatever it is that they're doing. So, no, I mean, this is a very premium grade of laundry detergent. Now, the one common thing that most people are confused with in the laundry detergent, in the use of the laundry detergent from either the store or wherever, the big companies, when they switched over to HE detergent, there was no real major PR campaign for that switch. I'm like everyone else, myself, I'm a consumer. I wash clothes. I was washing clothes almost every other day. I had my 3 children, my granny, and all that. And I never knew that there was a change in laundry detergent from the old to the new. I never really paid attention to the bubbles. Only thing I paid attention to was it irritating my skin. And that came as a result of using too much detergent in your wash load.
Right, right. So, and so what we'll do is we will make sure that we post like YouTube videos talking about that. And we'll actually create some YouTube videos around the detergent itself. Now, you do this all the time. As you are at the flea market, you create videos for people to view. But we'll make sure that we do some really specific ones as pertaining to the detergent itself versus the whole store. Because if you all would like to get into the business in your area, we definitely want to invite you to do that. And if this is something that you may be interested in, which is, you know, we'll repeat for those that didn't listen to the show last week, selling 5-gallon buckets of laundry detergent that is 2 times concentrated, which is comparable to a Tide product and a Gain product, just reach out to us. The email address would be weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. If some people are listening that reached out to us and you have not gotten the proper email back, just be patient with us because we're working with a new system. But we do have all of your information and we will be reaching out to you once again. And that email address again is weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. And as the days go on, we will be creating more videos for you all to see, which Robert has been doing the whole time. But we're really going full throttle with this because just as our last guest was on talking about creating streams of income, this too is a stream of income for you that may very well benefit your family, especially if you are living in an area where they're not selling these buckets of detergent. We have people all the way in Texas. We have people in North Carolina. I have people that are interested all over the country in selling these laundry detergent buckets. So if you'd like more personalized information, feel free to reach out to us. Again, weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. You'd be surprised at how these buckets of detergent sell because people are looking to save money these days. The days are over when we can just jump here, there, and everywhere and just buy things just because. No. People are looking to save money. As their dollars are getting shorter, they would like to save money. And these buckets definitely provide that because they are, again, 2 times concentrated. And a 5-gallon bucket, let me help you get this in your mind. A 5-gallon bucket is a paint bucket. Like when people come into the flea market, they say all the time, oh, what is this, paint? So they think that we have big buckets of paint all over the place. But it's not a paint bucket. It is a bucket filled with laundry detergent. So if you would like to get a pallet of this detergent delivered to you, Robert, how many detergents come on a pallet?
There's 36 5-gallon buckets on a pallet.
Okay. Okay. And what does that pallet run excluding the shipping and handling?
Well, that would be $720 for the 36 buckets. And we would need for you to email us your zip code,
mm-hmm,
so that we determine what your shipping price would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely want to make sure that we mention the laundry detergent every week. You know, as we develop strategies for our people, they should definitely be informed. So we have to just keep it out there. Is there any last words that you want to say to the people?
Yes, and one other thing that we also offer a 6 sessions on how to purchase real estate, land or real estate, a non-conventional approach that I have been using since 1998 and acquiring real estate. So I want to teach you how to do that. And you can, again, email us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com to schedule a consultation with us.
All right. Well, that sounds good. And we are going to say thank you so much for joining this week on Blacks in Business. We want to say thank you to our guest, Ms. Jamila Kemp and Luciana Turner. We thank you so much, ladies. Hopefully you can collaborate on some things. That is always my hope. But we will be with you again next week, the same time, next Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you all for listening, and we will say good night for BIB Radio.